Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
It was, I mean, yeah, there was definitely a moment Gavin said to me, "Stacey, just however you feel, if you just want to let out a scream." I was like, yeah, I definitely do.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Barrett Scher from CinemaSins.
Hello.
Today we have a very special guest. It is Stacey Martin, who is in a movie called Archive, coming out July 10th, which is, as of this recording, 2 days away. Mm-hmm. Last week we talked to Gavin Rothery we talked about Archive, and it was a great conversation, and we had a lot of fun talking about this movie. It's a very unique movie, and but you know what? You have a lot of movies on your filmography that we've never been able to talk to you about, and we want to know what it's like working with Lars von Trier.
I mean, it was my first job as an actor, and it was my first movie, and I had been a fan of his work as an audience member for such a long time, and then suddenly being next to him, talking to him, and then acting in one of his films was just so surreal for me, and I absolutely loved it. He's definitely one of the few greats I think that we have today in cinema, and his films are so complex, but they're also so funny and very ironic. And it was just such a joy that it was almost quite hard to then move on to other films with other directors, because I felt like I had just worked with the best of the best. And now what am I going to do?
So, right. That is amazing to start off on that level. How did you get the part of Joe? I mean, you carry Charlotte Gainsbourg is the older Joe, but yes. you carry especially that first part so widely. How does a first time feature actor get that role and work with that director?
I very simply auditioned for it. It was sort of a very strange process where I was taking acting classes at an acting studio in London, and I was very much just keen to continue doing that without looking for an agent or hoping for a career in any way. And I was going in for a commercial casting at the time, because one has to pay the bills.
Yeah.
And the casting director turned out to be Des Hamilton, who is this wonderful Scottish casting director who does a lot of street casting. And he just kept looking at me, and I thought, why is he staring? This is uncomfortable. Why do men have to stare at girls all the time? And I was getting ready to say something. I was like, this is it. I have enough of this. And I got in the room probably looking very pissed off and about to, I don't know what I was going to say, but God knows. And he was like, I don't want you to do this casting for this weird face wash or whatever. I want you to cast for Lars von Trier. And I was like, well, now he's just taking the piss. This
yeah.
is like, what is happening? Can I just was like, I just need to leave the situation. It's getting more and more just surreal. And I just found it very hard to believe it. But he gave me the sides and I read it. And from having thankfully going through my training, I sort of, I was like, okay, well, I know what I'm doing. It's not a complete newity to me. And I just did it. And then I went back for a recall, this time taking it very seriously and knowing that it was real. And then I went to Zentropa to meet Lars and do a screen test and thought, well, this is it. You know, I've met one of my idols and this process was wonderful. Thank you very much. And I was ready to move on with my life and go back to my acting classes. And then I think it was maybe 3 or 2 weeks before I finished, they said, you got the part.
Which, oh my God.
Like for me, I was like, really? Do they really want to give me the part? Me? Yes, I'll take it, absolutely. And then suddenly I was on set in Germany for about 3 months.
Wow. Oh, wow. I was wondering, is there so much footage in yeah. that that film? What, I think the director's cut is around 5-6 hours.
Yeah.
Like that just must have been an epic shoot. And especially for it being your first shoot, that must have been almost exhausting, right?
It was so exhilarating. I'd never done anything like that before. And I'd never had such support and such sort of enthusiasm to be part of something. Everyone was just so wonderful. And Lars works with the same people. So his costume designer has been with him from the start, and the same with his set designer. And so it's, you really have a sense of family. So it became this kind of this day-to-day life that I had. And every day we were creating something, we were making this film. And it was, I think I started to really realize how crazy the whole experience was only when it was over.
Oh yeah, I guess yeah. You'd get swept up in it at the time, right?
Yeah, and you just—I mean, and I something I still struggle with now is a project ending, and suddenly, you know, your routine and your schedule is completely gone. It just, and it's quite, it can be quite brutal. So it was definitely sort of, you learn very quickly that you know, there's other chapters in your life and you have to really kind of muster the energy. But that was definitely a big shock for me.
And it's not just Lars von Trier. You have actors that are legends in this movie. I mean, Uma Thurman, you have Connie Nielsen, you have Christian Slater, you have all these people that you worked with. And I don't know if you got to meet Charlotte Gainsbourg or Stellan Skarsgård during this whole thing, but
I did. They're wonderful.
I imagine so. That had to have been a little bit intimidating. How did you sort of work your way through that, or were you not intimidated?
I remember meeting Charlotte and definitely being quite nervous, I think, because I loved her work so much in Antichrist and Melancholia that I was just thinking that I was, you know, that we were playing the same character was just such a strange reality for me. And I really wanted to do the best I could do, not only for Lars, but also for her, because I didn't want to sort of fail, you know? And and it was just, I mean, unfortunately, because we were playing the same character, we didn't really get to spend that much time together. But I remember her just, it was just so simple. Sometimes you meet people and you can build this whole story and this whole aura and you try and say certain things and then you meet them and you're just like, oh, this is a human being and this is someone who has the same sensibility as me, and I can understand why Lars has put us together for this role. And so you kind of just, you get on with it. But I have to say, I was definitely starstruck when Uma Thurman arrived, because she's just such a powerhouse. And by the time she came, because I think she did her scene in about a day, which is quite intense for someone to arrive on set. And we had all gotten into a rhythm of shooting, and we all knew each other really well, which was great. And then suddenly Uma Thurman arrives, and I'm just looking at her thinking, this is Uma Thurman. Oh my God. Oh my God. This is Uma Thurman. What is happening to me? Why am I sweating? Is this being starstruck? And Lars had cut one of this. He said cut for one of the scenes. He normally would do, he would sort of let the scene roll out, but for some reason there was a problem. And I went up to him. I was like, Lars, I'm so sorry. I wasn't focusing. I just can't believe you. This is Uma Thurman. And it just got a bit overwhelming. I'm so sorry. He's like, Stacey, your expression was perfect. I was like, oh, I just don't know. Like, this is absolutely, just, I just didn't know what to do with myself. And thankfully it married well with the scene because I was just a mess that day.
That's perfect. That was my question, because that is by far the funniest, most intense scene in that movie. And it has everything. It has dramatic weight. It's consequential. It's sad. But it's also hilarious when she says, do you want to go sit on the whore bed? How do you keep it together when you've got Uma Thurman? And then she goes out into the stairwell and starts screaming hysterically. Yeah. Oh my God. And so I guess that is perfect that you were apoplectic, because otherwise you'd probably be falling over laughing, right?
I probably would be. I mean, there was a moment in that, in one of the takes, because basically we would do it in one take. The whole scene would be one take and we would do it a few times. But there would be times where I would just have to leave the scene, compose myself, and just be like, okay, I don't know what to do. That's okay, because I am not meant to know what I'm doing. But stick with it. Stick with this feeling, because I remember wanting to be in control and wanting to, someone is very distraught in front of you. Your instinct is to want to comfort. Or to try and calm the situation down. But she was just getting more and more revved up. And I don't have the reins in this scene, and this is okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Because in that scene, your character is basically not feeling one way or the other about everything that's going on in that scene. And it's really interesting to hear this about Lars von Trier, by the way, because... because when you see his films, you have this idea of a guy who must have gone through some things, and he must be that way on set too. But people like to go work for him because he makes such great art. But it sounds like to me that he's just like a normal dude.
I mean, don't get me wrong; he's definitely troubled in like, I think he has a lot of anxieties and stuff like that. But he's definitely by no means a tyrant, and he's definitely not manipulative or mean or horrible. And I had such a wonderful experience working with him, because he, from the moment that he cast me, he said, do not worry whether or not you're good enough. You've been cast in the movie, now you have to do it, and you can do it. And that sense of trust, and that sense of sort of, he's a real kind of, I want to say Gandalf, but it might sound crazy to a lot of people, but there is this very strong kind of shepherd thing in him that was just so wonderful. And he's funny, and he's definitely the kind of kid that probably sat at the back of the class doing, God knows what. But there's something fun about that. There's something exhilarating about someone being able to pull their version of what they want to do in such a strong way. It's hard to make a film, and it's hard to make a film in the way that a director wants. And I think thankfully he's able to do that.
I could talk about this film for the entire hour that we have. But,
well, it is 6 hours.
But yeah. But obviously once you're in a movie like that, the fun doesn't stop for you at that point. Because you have been with several directors that are great, like Ridley Scott. All the Money in the World. Now, I know that was a small role, but how was that? How was that? What was that like?
I loved it. I remember this is, it was quite a funny one because I remember sending in, I did a tape for it and I was doing this tape on my own. So I had this very strange setup that actors and very sadly have to sometimes put themselves through of recording myself, but recording the other person's line and making sure that the time was okay for me to say the lines. And I'd spent hours doing this and thought, I just need to send it. And I'm uploading it on my laptop and I send it and then I look at it and I'm thinking something's a bit odd. And I'd sent my tapes, but I had red lipstick all over my teeth. I thought, well, great. Now I've just blown this opportunity. What am I? This is a great. Well done. And so when he ended up casting me, I was like, oh God, does he think I'm completely aloof? Should I make it a character thing and just roll with it?
Lean into it.
Yeah. You're just like, well, clearly he liked it. So I, you know, maybe Nancy, the secretary, is kind of a bit ditzy and who knows? And I absolutely, I just remember arriving there and it was my first experience of a Hollywood movie, of being on a set that was that big. And it was like arriving in Disneyland. I mean, I'm used to making small independent films and where they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, we've only got bread and cucumber to give you. I'm like, oh. And we're like, smoothies, and here's Mark Wahlberg and Michelle Williams. But it was a strangely great acting lesson because I had all this time to absorb how these greats were working and how they would do a scene, and also to see how Ridley shot scenes. It was so fascinating. I loved it.
Were you part of any reshoots on that movie?
I was, yes. Because a lot of my scenes were part of Mr. Getty's setting, I had to go back, and it was, it's almost like having a flashback and then being in the flashback, because we did exactly the same scenes in the same location, the same costume, the same people involved, the same position. The camera was, I mean, it was quite impressive. They managed to recreate it closely. But at the same time, we had another actor and that's another energy. So there was this strange kind of feeling of like, oh, I know what I'm doing. Oh, but now I don't, because Christopher Plummer has this whole other aura and he's so wonderful. Mm-hmm. And this is a new, I had to really remind myself, like, just take it as a new scene, a new job, because whatever interaction I will have with him as an actor will be different to Kevin Spacey, because they're different people.
Right. So, you know, it's incredible to hear all the things that have to go through your mind. If you pardon the comparison, you're like an NFL quarterback where you have to have so many things going through your head at once. The energy of the scene partner, your lines, obviously, your energy, you know, what the character is supposed to do, what you're supposed to do, your marks, where the camera is. Is it just a process that comes with practice, or is some of it kind of a natural thing to where you feel all that chaos just kind of calm you down?
It's sort of, I quite like when things are busy. I've noticed that I have tendencies to freak out and panic. And if there's just a lot going on around me, there's something about that that calms me down and focuses me. But a lot of my work ethic and a lot of the way that I am on set, I have learned by working. As much as my acting teacher taught me a technique, there's only so much, you know, they can tell you stories of what it's like to be on set, they can give you examples, they can give you advice, but until you're there and until, you know, you have the craziness of what that implies, it's hard to fully know. And you have to make it, you have to really make it your own process when you're on set, and that's the hardest thing.
There's another movie that I've seen of yours that I thought was interesting. It was Godard Mon Amour.
Right.
And it's Michelle Hazanavicius. Thank you. I only watched his Oscar clip five times to get that. He notably beat out Martin Scorsese, Terrence Malick, and Woody Allen for his best director. Just a crazy thing there. I love this movie. It's such a cheeky look at Jean-Luc Godard. It's a story based on, now this is a name that I have not heard. I'm going to try. You play Anne Wiesenski?
Yes, correct.
Okay. It's based on her story about, I guess, being with Jean-Luc Godard during this, 4 or 5 year period.
Yes.
She's in this movie La Chinoise, and it's kind of an interesting thing. Like, I mean, obviously Louis Garrel, I don't know how his name is pronounced, but he's great. He's great in it. I saw him in Little Women. I saw him in The Dreamers, and he's really good. You're playing someone who's basically having to deal with, I don't know if it's an emotional abuse of some sort where he's just not, it's not really abuse, but it's neglect. How did you get into the mindset of this character? Did you get to meet Anne Wiesenski?
Well, so the great thing about this was that it was based on a book. And I think it was based on one book entirely, and then she wrote quite a few about her experiences in cinema, and some of it is also from another book that she wrote. So I had a very immediate reference to go to, and also I had this big bank of cinema to also take from, just from the amount of films that Godard had made. And obviously, because we weren't making a film from the new wave, we weren't making a Godard film, we were making a Michel Hazanavicius film, which is a very specific style, it has a very specific genre and a very specific tone. Michel and I had decided to go away from doing a sort of copy image of who Anne was, and to kind of balance it out with the amazing work that Louis was doing to represent this figure, we decided to really take reference from all of Godard's muses. Mm-hmm. And when you look at sort of the great men of, you know, whether it's Picasso or whether it's, you know, Godard, I mean, they all have these amazing women next to them. And it was it was something that I was so curious about. And I was thinking, what is it? You know, what is this strange concept of a muse? And what is it exactly for the women? Because, a lot of them were artists in their own right. And Anne was a person of her own right. But it's definitely sort of heartbreaking when you see someone that you'd love who is so self-absorbed that they miss out on not only their friendships but their relationships. And with Godard, what was even sort of more pushed is that he negated his friendships, his beliefs, his relationship with Anne, and then his cinema. He really sort of had a revolution against himself. And it was about, for me, that was just something that really fascinated me, sort of what makes an artist suddenly negate everything that they've done.
Yeah, it's at times it's hilarious, but at other times it's just kind of, you know, oh my God, what an asshole this guy is.
Yeah.
And even there's even a scene where he, like, with great irony, but unbeknownst to him, says, would you rather, I can't remember what it is. He says something to another couple in a restaurant where he says, you know, would you like to be with an asshole or whatever? And he doesn't even realize he's being an asshole during that whole scene.
Yeah.
And I'm like, gosh, it's gotta be tough. Like going through all of that, you don't get to feel any love whatsoever after this intense period during the filming of that movie and everything. And then I just thought it was fascinating. And I thought you did a really great job in that movie.
Oh, thank you. I mean, the wonderful thing about that film was that it was also such an homage to new wave cinema. So Michelle, you know, who is just such a wonderful artist, like all of his shots were very precise and they were all very thought through. And it was kind of incredible to be able to suddenly do a scene where we're looking into camera, like they would do in Pierrot le Fou or the films like that. And then to suddenly have Michelle say, well, this is going to go into black and white and then back into color. And it's sort of, you also have fun with genre, which is so rare as an actor that someone will say, well, we're doing this type of film now. And now we're doing this type. This is more of a comedy. And now this is more of the drama. And I think the film really represents a lot of all of that.
It really does. There's a lot of like just cheeky little references that, you know, actor, like, you know, breaking the fourth wall is one thing, but they're also, I don't know what you would call it, but they're saying a lot of stuff that's very self-aware. There's a point where Godard is saying, you know, like I could get an actor to say that, you know, they're dumb because they're so dumb. And the actor is saying this in the movie.
Yeah.
So I love little touches like that. It's a really entertaining movie. I don't know if it even got over here. I only just stumbled across it. So.
It did. Yeah. Cause I remember coming to New York to do, to present it. And it was, sometimes I was quite nervous about it because I thought, why is the humor going to translate and are people going to understand? Cause some of it can be quite dense and it can be quite heavy with the language. And actually what I found is that Michelle has such a wonderful talent for comedy that it did translate and people were laughing. And it was kind of that sense of, oh, well, you know, cinema does travel and it's everyone can understand it, whatever language it's in.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You sound like you're a real student of film, Stacey. It seems like you're interested in the process and the thinking behind it rather than you're just showing up and, you know, punching a clock or something like that. And you certainly, looking at your career so far, you haven't had, you don't make easy movies. You make movies that kind of get the brain stimulating and everything. Is this an intentional choice? Are you seeking out these projects, or is it just kind of the things that you are more gravitated to, the more things that come to you?
I think I used to think it was a very natural evolution in my career. And I think having started with Lars, it kind of gave a tone to the type of films that I wanted to do. I think really ultimately I absolutely love directors and I really thrive from the collaboration with a director. It it's just so inspiring for me. And I think that's sort of where my love of cinema comes from, is I love films that have an identity, that have a style. And I think people can disagree on taste and opinion, and I'm very happy to sort of discuss if someone hasn't liked one of my films. I'm sort of always quite curious to understand why, and to just have a conversation. But what I do, I admire the talent and the passion that a director brings to make a film.
This movie Archive must have been a different experience for you. Gavin Rothery told us that most of this was practical effects. I guess there was at least one scene in here where there was, you know, where you had to wear some sort of like green pants or something, and they had to cut your legs out and everything like that. How was the experience here? Because I feel like you're playing about four different characters in this movie.
It was definitely a challenge, and prior to even knowing about this project, I, in my mind, had always thought, well, I want to do something so different that no one would ever imagine me do. And if I took it to the extreme, I thought, well, that would be playing a robot. And this script came along, and what fascinated me so much, apart from the fact that it sort of was like exactly what I was looking for, is that it had such a sense of play. And I was really keen to explore that with Gavin, because he was talking about the robots in a very human way, almost as if they were different people. And I was like, okay, well, this could be a bit of a head fuck, but how would I navigate this, and what would the process be? And then I realized, well, a lot of it is also based on, will work because of the practical effects. Like a lot of the work is also done through costume. And I just thought, this is an amazing story, but it's also an amazing cinematic experience. Like, you can really feel in this story and in the film just how much Gavin absolutely loves technology and science fiction, and also how much he loves a drama, and how much he loves a love story. And you have all of this mix of styles. But it was very different from being, it's just, I think the first time that I've ever ventured into something completely at the opposite of what I'm used to be doing.
The character that I think both Barrett and I had a real emotional connection to was the one that's playing the teenage robot, essentially. I suppose that was like voice work for you on this, but there is a lot being emoted, and there's a lot in this character that was really touching. How did you get into the mode of the 16-year-old kid, basically?
That was quite a process, and actually it happened a lot more in post-production. So on set, that J2 and J1, who are the first earlier robots created by George, they were moved by actual people. So people were in these robots, and they did such a fantastic job at not only being a robot, but being emoting, like you said, and just by little movements, and whether it be the fingers twitching or the head moving, they become so relatable. And the great thing about being a teenager, and I think that that's a very easy thing to say, it's tough being a teenager, but is there's such a sense of naivety. And there's such a sense of innocence, even though every emotion that you feel at that time of your life is so raw. And I think we can all relate to it because there's no filter. The emotions are there. We're trying to survive with all of these new notions in our lives. And for me, that character was, I mean, I cried at, I don't know if I can, I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to say any spoilers or anything, but she was the one.
Yeah, and that's what we had to deal with.
It's just like, you just find yourself weeping. And then I was like, why am I crying? I know this film. I know this story. But it's just so touching that, you know, I think Gavin suddenly, you know, that loss of innocence, he really sort of made it a very real thing that was so touching and heartbreaking.
The one shot that absolutely kills me is both in different ways is when you and George are dancing, the J3 and he are dancing. And it's a nice scene. Like it's very pleasant. Like you guys, you're finally drawing him out of his shell and, you know, everybody's having a good time. And then there's a cut to the singular eye of the J2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is heartbreaking, but also kind of funny at the time that you're being spied on by this robot. And then of course, you know, the sadness that goes onto it. But I think that's just a nice juxtaposition of those two characters, which are both you, and how they interact and interplay to the finale.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's such it's like it builds up. Like every little moment of this film is like a puzzle, and they all connect to one thing, and they all come together at the end. But you don't realize it necessarily at the time, and then suddenly you're caught up in the motion of the story. And you don't realize how much, almost just how much it's been affecting you this whole time.
Right.
Was the makeup effects or anything, was that difficult or was that fun or how'd that work out?
I was so excited. I was just thrilled. And then the reality kicked in. Every day I spent about probably like 4 to 5 hours in makeup.
Okay. Can I ask you about this? Because I hear this all the time.
People,
he or she spent, you know, 5-6 hours in makeup. Are you seriously like sitting fairly still for all this time? Like, do you have to go into a meditative trance? Like, how does this, I can't even imagine sitting still for more than 30 minutes at a time. Like, how is this possible?
I can do about 2 hours. You know, that's sort of like a very normal time for me to get ready in the morning. But this was a whole other level. And it got to a point where I just had to really enter this weird zone, you know, of just not panicking, because it can be quite oppressive as well. You have a lot of people around you. And then suddenly after that whole process, you become the character because you're physically changed. There's just not one part of you that is the same. From your face, from your body, you can't move the same way. I couldn't talk the same way because it positioned my back very strangely. And so my throat was leaning forwards, which meant my voice felt very different. I mean, it was a very, very strange process. But I loved doing it. It was hard and I was definitely pretty grumpy on set. but I loved, like, I loved it. I don't know if I'd do it again, but I definitely, there was something I just enjoyed the experience. I was like, I've said yes to this experience. Like, you have to brace it in. It was this one, it's just an experience that looking back, I'm quite surprised that I managed, because if you put it on paper and you ask someone, oh, this is what you're going to be going through, they'd probably say no.
Mm-hmm.
And there were definitely moments where I was just thinking, why have I done this? This is, this is
painful. It was this, in the third hour in the chair.
I know Gandhi. Yeah. And then you have to spend, I think it took about an hour and a half to take it all off because it was glued to my face.
Oh my God.
It was full on prosthetics that are glued to my face. But every time they took a layer off, I could see differently. I could hear differently. Like it was the strangest experience. And I think in a way it really helped for the character of J3 because she has this sense of what is going on. She's coming to grips with who she is, even though she knows who she is. And she's trying to navigate in a world that she can physically manage, but everything still feels quite new. So I kind of just took everything that I was feeling and thought, well, she would probably feel the same way because I'm also
Oh, that's
learning.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So. Did you have the same reaction that she did when she first woke up? Because that is one of the, certainly the
I've been awake
memorable
for a
parts
lot
of the
longer
movie.
Than that. But it was, I mean, yeah, there was definitely a moment Gavin said to me, Stacey, just however you feel, if you just want to let out a scream. I was like, yeah, I definitely do.
Yes, sounds good.
I mean, the whole team just, yeah. Yeah, sounds great.
Well, it's perfect. Your performance, you know, everybody, well, I guess it's just really you and George, but certainly Toby Jones has a nice, Rona Mitra has a wonderful little part in there, especially her final command to you, which I thought was hilarious and poignant at the same time. Mm. But your performance goes from such subtlety, especially that first interaction chronologically in the movie, to where it's fully fleshed out. I mean, it really is a groan. And as we talked to Gavin about this, this movie has one of the most satisfying endings I've seen in forever. And of course, we're not going to spoil it. But you have a lot on your shoulders during that last sequence. Can I ask you just real quick, like how much of this is filmed sequentially to where you can take it down to a subtle performance and then have that humdinger of an ending where you really have to shine in a variety of ways? Like, does it have to be sequential, or are you used to doing, you know, a piecemeal and just bringing the scene what it needs at that moment?
I think we shot, if I remember correctly, we definitely shot the first part of J3. So when she's still on her rig in her sort of gray and black costume, we shot that first. And so we did it by costume, by phase, let's say, which was very helpful in terms of just, you know, feeding the character with history and experience. And then the ending was also a whole other challenge because you're suddenly negating all of the work that you've just done because that reality shifts. But we did it towards the end of the shoot. And I think unintentionally, but it so happened that was it just so happened that we had that location at the end of the day, at the end of the shoot, sorry. So it was sort of a weird farewell to all of these characters that we had played. And yeah, it's a weird and surreal moment that you kind of go, oh, this is the end.
Both as a viewer and I'm sure as a character too, right?
Yeah. It's very strange. And the little girl is actually Gavin's daughter. And I think her, it was also just quite weird. She's like, daddy's making a movie, but what?
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously we don't want to spoil too much. This is the dangers of having interviews. We don't want to say too much about a movie like this because you want to go in and be surprised by a lot of the things that happen in it and everything. But we were talking about your past work and everything, and one of the others that I know both Barrett and I have seen is Vox Lux.
Mm. Oh yes,
and that is a very unusual film, the way it is structured. You get to do the rare thing where you get to play the older sister in the younger part of it, but you also get to play the older sister in the older part of it too. Again, you're getting treated so badly in this movie. What's going on?
But is she though? That's the question. I mean, it was, I think Brady Corbet, who's an incredible director and who's now a very, very dear friend of mine, mm-hmm. wanted to do quite similarly to his first film, Childhood of a Leader. He wanted to look at, in terms of the 20th century, what are the big events in America that have shaped the story of the world that we're in today. And so the first part and the second part is very emblematic of a society that is dealing on one side with terrorism and on the other side with this extremely growing sort of, how can you call it? Sort of fandom, stardom, sort of, I call it the internet ego. Those are quite big things, and he put them together, and it's such a ride, and it's such a cinematic experience as well, just for the viewer. Because on one side you have Scott Walker doing the score, and then you also have Sia writing mm-hmm. pop songs that are sung by Rafi Cassidy and Natalie Portman. I mean, the whole thing is absolutely bonkers, but in the best of ways, where this story becomes more and more epic as it goes along.
It's such a singular movie. It's really, really knocked my socks off.
Which it leads me to this next thing. You and Rafi Cassidy, mm-hmm. how do you guys get American accents down so well? This is something that Barrett, I know, is very interested in. When Americans do a British accent, it's always the same nonsense. But you guys...
It sounds awful.
Yeah. You guys seem to always nail it. And in fact, it gets to the point where we don't even know that you're from Europe. And until you do an interview and you're like, oh, where did that come from?
You know? It's not fair, Stacey. It's not fair for you guys to be able to do us better than we do us or we do you.
I think it's just a deep unease in Britishness that people are just finding it very easy to not be themselves, I think. No, I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, Rafi is absolutely incredible. She's so talented, and she's a really hard worker. And it sort of felt so effortless for her. She was so, so wonderful. Because it's also in Vox Lux such a specific accent. Whereas for me, it was a little harder because I've sort of grown up all over the world, and my accent has changed also as I've grown older. And it's a lot more English now than it ever used to be. I used to have a more transatlantic accent. And slightly closer to the American side. So I have a tendency to go towards an American accent if I'm in America, but to then make it a geographical accent that was so specific was a lot more work for me. But I loved it. It was such an amazing history lesson learning a new accent, because you do so much research into how someone lives and what makes them speak certain ways or what certain expressions mean. I mean, there's some things I was like, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
You have to come back on and talk to us all. The whole thing is about accents. Cause I could talk about that for
it's
hours.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Stacey Martin, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us. We appreciate
for having
it.
Me.
Archive comes out on July 10th, and watch it. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
That'll do it for this interview. It's Chris Atkinson, Barrett Scher, and Stacey Martin. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.